Hey, this podcast replay, it's brought to you by Sports Grill with 7 great locations. Check out the Bird Road and Miami Lakes locations. Sports Grill is the home to the legendary Sports Grilled Wings, and catch our Dolphins pre- and post-game shows at the Miami Lakes and Bird Road locations for the 2021 season.
There we go. All right, we got it now. There we go. All right, we're ready to rock. Hour number 3 already, man. Alan Poupart's going to join us at 12:30. So we'll have a little fun with Alan, and we'll discuss all things Dolphins. We'll get his thoughts on stuff going on with Miami. He's there now in camp. No show in South Florida has 3 insiders that are constantly following the Dolphins, traveling with the Dolphins, covering the practices, then this show right here. You won't find it on any of the garbage stations locally in town, not on 560, not on 790. They will not do it because they're not truly dedicated. They're lazy, and they barely have any live programming as it is. And then there's nothing else after that, pretty much locally in town. Let's see, what else do we have here going on that I wanted to talk a little bit about on Le Programme? Raekwon Davis. Now, I do want to remind you that placing Raekwon on the IR is actually a good thing. I'd rather you not push it and risk that the young man could further injure whatever he has. And hopefully it's not something serious. Hopefully he doesn't even have to be there for 3 weeks. And Omar made a really good point on the show. I think it was on Monday. He might have made it on Monday, if I'm correct. Yeah, I think he made it on Monday, that really Buffalo is not a power-running team. And that is actually true. They're not really the kind of team that wants to punch you in the mouth and run. No, the quarterback will do some running. The running backs are kind of guys that catch passes. And like Singletary is not a power back or anything like that. And now they can run the ball, obviously, but they're gonna challenge you also on the edges a lot with the running game. And as you all know, this team has had, you know, some issues with running quarterbacks. Josh has had success running the ball against the Dolphins, but this defense has gotten better since the first year to where it's at now. And I'd rather you slow walk the injury with Raekwon and try to, you know, save him for a couple weeks down the line, where at least you can have a healthy guy that hopefully can stay in one piece for the rest of the year, because he's so important for the middle of the line. And this is one of those guys that I was expecting a breakout year from for the Miami Dolphins, because I really feel like he has the talent to be an ultimate difference maker and a disruptor in the middle of the field. And now, I did not see on, and I'll ask Alan at the bottom of the hour, but I haven't heard if they're going to activate Benito Jones or Jabal Sheard. I would actually get Sheard, because Sheard has a sack history. He's got like 53 in his career. He's a 10-year veteran, and against a Bills team, I think you need a veteran. And so I'm hoping that it's Sheard, because Benito looks like he's got some skills, but he hasn't really developed. And to put him in this kind of a situation, it would be tough. So Sheard would be the guy that I would like to see if they do activate, because they still have a spot open to activate, but they can probably wait till later in the week to make that decision to find out if there's any other injuries, God forbid, but in practice, you never know. So they may have to make other decisions. But I would like to see Jabal Sheard be the guy that gets elevated, and because he could practice with the team. So I'm sure they've got him at least in condition too in the process. Derek Anthony on Twitter says, so watching the game back and this past week, everyone overreacted on the captain's pick. No one player had the C patch on their uniform, unless I'm missing something. I mean, he's the quarterback, dude. All he has to do is ball out. Who gives a shit about a C? The C doesn't matter anything. You know what matters? That they believe that you can lead them to a win. Now, if Tua loses the locker room in that sense, so if you have a C, how does that help? Narratives. That's all. Well, he wasn't a pick captain. What happens if he sucks? What does the captain do for you? Hey, I got the C. You got to listen to me. Okay, no, I got the C. Okay, I tell you guys where to sit in the cafeteria. I got a C. I'll tell you guys when you can talk to the media and not. What's the C going to do for you, bro? Is the C going to help you play better? He's the quarterback. Every quarterback's the leader. He doesn't need a damn C. What he needs to do is go out there and kick ass. What he needs to do is, you know, play the game where his teammates go, this is our guy, and we're fighting for him all the way to the end. And last time I checked, I think I saw a Dolphins team fight all the way to the end on Sunday. Kid made a lot of plays, and even when he made the bad play, somehow or another, defense found a way to pick him up and help out the offense and help out Tua in that moment. Awesome. That's what you want to see. When you have no hope, that's a different ball game. So what, putting the C on Andy Dalton makes a difference for you? So let's just get ridiculous and let's just start talking about things that really don't matter. The C's not going to help you when you got to scramble and get away from a defensive end and try to make a play. The C doesn't help you when you've got to place the ball over the shoulder of the wide receiver because there's a DB that is hanging on his other shoulder. The C's not going to help you in any way, shape, or form. So what's the big deal? Go out and ball, kid. You go out and ball, everything else will work out. And that's all that matters. C. Like, he really needs that to become a successful quarterback. Come on. We get to these silly things, and it's just 24-hour news cycle. Let me write something. Let me find something controversial and all that kind of stuff. Big O, I follow Flying Fluffy, who talks about the Florida Panthers. Great guy. If you can bring him on during the hockey season, Panthers winning it all this year. I have no idea who Flying Fluffy is. Maybe I know the person. I didn't know maybe his nickname. I have no idea what that means. But I know we will have George Richards on, and why my man David Dwork. Got nothing but love for my man David Dwork, as always. George Richards, I've known for a long time, one of the good dudes in this business. So we will have those guys on for sure during the hockey season. That I can guarantee you, because I've always had them on during the season. And when I started Onside, I had those guys also involved in all of this. So I will. Don't worry about it. We'll cover the Panthers. We'll cover. If the Marlins give me a chance and start doing their part, I would love to talk more Marlins. I know that baseball is not big, but I love baseball. I love the Marlins. I just need them to do their job. Dean Brown says, exactly. Typical fans just want to win no matter the style and win. We need to play a lot better to compete against the league's best. I agree. Big O, don't you know that the C on their chest is where Tom Brady hides his magic crystals that keep him young and allow him to manipulate the football and people? My wife said something she was right, that dude actually looks better now than he did younger when he was younger. He's found the fountain of youth, bro. I don't know how he's done it. Eichenberg didn't get pancaked on Sunday. He got tripped on Kinley's foot. That's why he fell. Yes, we all know that already. That highlight has gone all over. It's become viral for the poor kid getting tripped up on his right leg when he was dropping back, which happens at times. Again, young guy, man. Things happen. Miami has a bottom five OL, and look how many expensive assets were used to reach recently. Yeah, exactly. You'd rather keep Flowers around than just develop the young guy. You made a mistake, you move on, and you get the young guy. I don't have a problem with any of that. And Flowers was brought in because you were a young team. You didn't have enough linemen. So he was just a stopgap guy. Not a big deal, man. That's not something that I'm worried about. The the bitter Dolphin fan that can't let go of the past is the one that's hanging on to any little negative that they can find. Meanwhile, the team won 10 games. And they're 1-0 now. And to be talking about Eric Flowers, brother, you know, get a life. Get laid. Worry about something else, dude. Holy shit. You're going to keep worrying about Minka Fitzpatrick, too? You're going to worry about Laremy Tunsil? Going to keep worrying about that? Go ahead. Knock yourselves out, bro. That's that. You got to love the person that only has to worry, that keeps worrying about crap in the past that's not affecting anything right now. Eric Flowers wasn't going to make a difference here. He wasn't that good last year. So if they admitted that it was a mistake, what do? You keep the mistake around? I guess you must love when they kept Jamar Fletcher out there, huh? And they kept playing Eddie Moore. I guess you must have loved that. I love the people that it's like my boy Greg Bedard. Well, he's on his third offensive coordinator. Well, then if he feels they suck, fire him. What are you going to do? Because I've watched bad coaches be kept, like Tom Olivadotti, and they kept him, and they kept him, and they kept him. It's like, come on, Shoes, get rid of him. And that's Shula. I've watched him keep Joe Philbin around and give him an extension after winning a meaningless Minnesota game. I mean, it's really like, dude, it's like this guy Rick is a sour little bitch. Lots of mistakes. They won 10 games, almost made the playoffs in their second year, and they're 1-0. Brother, again, go get laid, bro. Clearly, you don't get laid enough. It's sad, really. But those are the Dolphins right now that can't even allow themselves to enjoy what's going on and how the team is getting better every single time. I got a question for you all. Since we got a bunch of folks there on the chat board, and of course, if you're listening on the podcast, whenever you are, BigORadioShow@yahoo.com. All right? Here's the question, because I just to have a little fun with this. Chandler Jones over the weekend sacked Tannehill 5 times in the game. Okay, so he's got 5 sacks on the season. Now, let's have some fun here. If Chandler Jones, which I don't think is going to happen, but just in case, it could, you never know. If Chandler Jones gets 5 more sacks in the next 16 games, did he have a great year? Because normally 10 sacks is considered a pretty damn good year. A Chandler Jones is probably a 12, 14 sack guy, but 10 would be at least a good year for him, not a great year for him. But let's just say that. So if he has 5 more sacks, and at the end of the year, right, man, Chandler Jones had 10, but he had 5 in one game. Is it still a great year or a good year for him overall? Or 5 sacks in 16 games, which is the normal regular season, used to be at least, that's not impressive. That's decent. That'll be good for Jalen Phillips. If Jalen Phillips can get 5 sacks this year as a rookie, that would be pretty good for him. As a young guy, not bad. That actually would be a nice floor for him in that 4 to 6 sack range if he can do something like that. But for Chandler Jones, if he gets 5 more in the next 16, is it still considered a good year after you got 5 in one game? Because it would be, you know, it's kind of screwed up if it does happen that way, because it's great to get 5. But I was thinking, what if he doesn't get a lot for the rest of the year after this? They go into the playoffs and the guy stays with his 10 sacks. I wonder how that's viewed. Jeremiah says, nope, that's not good. Tannehill has we know Tannehill has no pocket presence. Chandler was insane. Yes, he was. Let's see, maybe for a rookie. Let's see what else. No, that's an average year. Yeah. He needs 12 or more sacks now. You mean 12 on top of the 5? Or do you mean 12 in total is what you mean? Let me live in peace. a decent year, not great, right? It wouldn't look as good if you end up with five more sacks in the next 16 games. And the big picture going, hey, it's a 10-sack season. That's pretty good. But if you got five in your first game, so it'll be, I think he'll have a hell of a year because the guy is, he is a monster pass rusher. So he probably should get a lot more. Hakeem says, I don't get laid enough, Big O, but I don't act like that about the past Dolphin decisions. I mean, there's nothing to complain about Miami right now. Nothing. Zero. Nothing. After going through Philbin and Gase and all this stuff that you've had in the past, and you watch this guy win five games with no talent and then win 10 games, and now he's 1-0, there's nothing to complain about whatsoever. If the team continues to improve, what's there to complain about? To look back at a couple moves here or there, you're not going to, every move is not going to be 100%. So to me, it's petty. It's short-sighted also. And really, you know, people that are complaining, you kind of deserve Adam Gase and Joe Philbin, bro. Really. Seriously. I would love to send you to, like, you ever saw that show Sliders with Jerry O'Connell? I would love to send you back to Sliders, and I want you to go to an alternate universe where you're freaking stuck with Adam Gase for the rest of your life and Tony Sperano celebrating field goals and Wanstead running his fingers through his hair and Cam Cameron telling you to turn that thumb right side up. All that good stuff. So you can hang out with Ted Ginn and his family. That's what you deserve. I'd love to send your ass back to an alternate universe where you're stuck with a crappy coach and crappy results instead of a team that's actually up and coming and, you know, is actually getting the respect of people around the league, and slowly but surely they're climbing the ladder in this damn division. But that's all right. Again, at the end of the year, you can turn around and get your revenge is what can happen. Let's see. What else do we have? Do people realize how hard it is to win on a Sunday, let alone in Foxborough? No, they don't. No, they don't. Yeah. They have no idea, my brother. Zero. Let's see. What else do we have? Hard Knocks may be over. Tomorrow night at halftime, you will find out the future of Hard Knocks. They stop allowing you to see the players getting cut, which is kind of brutal at times. Although it is funny when Vontae Davis needs to call his grandmother. I will admit, I never get enough of that scene, right? And Jeff Ireland saying we got a bunch of threes, fours, and fives, and sixes, and four fives and sixes. We need one, twos, and threes. Which it's like, well, dude, isn't that your job? That's your job, right? So Hard Knocks, we'll find out. And I will admit that this year's Hard Knocks didn't have a lot of drama. I enjoyed the cornerback. His son was absolutely magical. His son is such a character. The young cornerback, I'm forgetting his name now. He had an interception on the Thursday night game, actually. And I enjoyed that. But, you know, the human interest part of it, there, a lot of times that's pretty cool. I like that part of it. But there wasn't a lot of drama. And there wasn't a lot of, I can't even say there were a ton of entertaining moments either part of it. And apparently they've limited a little bit of their access. And so now the future of Hard Knocks is in doubt. So we'll see what happens with Hard Knocks. I've been a supporter of Hard Knocks every single year. I've watched every one, never missed Hard Knocks. But I will say, if you're going to limit access, then it's going to take away from the show itself, and I probably would not watch it anymore. Once it gets to fluff, you know what I mean? It's kind of like working for 560 and 790. You have to be fluff. You can't really go after the team really hard or the coaches or the players or anything like that, because of course you'll have a wussy ass program director telling you, hey, we have a partnership. So, you know, those kind of things. So I get it. But you know, Hard Knocks looks like it's going to go by the wayside, or they're going to do something completely different from here on out with it. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they've got in mind for that one. Fitzy is out 6 to 8 weeks with the hip injury. Looks like his career is over. Now, the part where Washington, it's a long season, dude. You already lost a quarterback. You got 16 more. Taylor Heinicke is not the answer. Okay, I've watched the kid play, and maybe he can develop into it. He's a young quarterback, hasn't really gotten a lot of playing time at this level, kind of like what I was telling you with Noah. So maybe he's a guy that's under the radar. I saw him a little bit in the XFL, and then I've watched him here with the NFL. I think he played a little bit maybe last year. Did he? Was it last year? I know I saw him in the preseason, obviously now with Washington. But they've also got Kyle Allen there, which is the kid that Ron Rivera had in Carolina. So he brought him over. So the talk of Cam, would you bring Cam in? But now you would have to change the offense, and that's not what Heinicke plays. That's not what Kyle Allen plays, although he did it in Carolina, where he had Cam starting and he had Kyle Allen backing up, and then Kyle Allen ended up playing some games. And I remember Kyle actually had a couple of decent performances and then kind of fell by the wayside. You know what I'm saying? So we'll see what happens there. But it's kind of sad for Fitz, man. You know, I feel bad for him, because obviously you don't want to go out that way. But Washington might be at a point 6 to 8 weeks down the line where they've lost so much. I don't even know if they're trying at that point to win games, and why you play, you know, Fitz. Maybe you're just going to play out and get a draft pick. You know what I'm saying? Or find a young guy and try to develop him. Can I tell you something that I was like, I was wondering if they would like look around, you know, the practice squads and try to steal a guy too. That could be also a thing that they could end up doing. We'll see. All right, let's talk a little Miami Dolphins football. Alan Pupar always is ready to join us to talk with the Sports Grill Miami Dolphins Weekly Report with Alan Pupar. We do that next.
Let's get ready to talk Dolphins football. It's the Sports Grill Miami Dolphins Report with Sports Illustrated's Alan Pupart. With locations throughout South Florida, check out our sponsored locations in Miami on Bird Road in 114th and in Miami Lakes in the Ryan Oaks Plaza. Here's Miami Dolphins insider Alan Pupart.
There he is, clear blue skies, little puffy white clouds behind you. That's a great picture right there, dude. It's a beautiful day in Miami Gardens. I almost said Davey, dude.
Oh, bad call there. Hey, hopefully it doesn't start pouring like it did last week at this time when I was doing my spot. But right now, no, it's beautiful. Very hot, though.
Yeah, no, I would imagine it cannot rain right now, bro. It just doesn't look like there's a drop in sight, brother. It looks like a beautiful day out there. All right, first of all, Raekwon Davis, he said it was kind of day-to-day, but that's what he labels everything, right? So we really don't know, and he didn't give you any specifics either on the injury, I would imagine.
Nothing at all. I asked point blank, can you say that the injury is not season ending? And the reply was, he's working his way back day to day like everybody else. He's at a minimum of 3 weeks because he's on IR. So we could be dealing with a minor knee thing, and it could be like strictly 3 weeks, or we could be dealing with a torn ACL and he's out for the year and we wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. We've talked about this. So is it Benito? Is it Jabal Sheer? I would like to see Sheer actually activated, because he can get after the quarterback a little bit, and you are playing against an active guy. Plus, he's got the serious experience compared to Benito, who has no experience. Or do you think neither guy gets activated?
Yeah, the problem with Jabal Sheard, that becomes an apples to orange replacement, because Sheard is an edge guy, pass rusher, and what they lost was their best run stuffer, nose tackle. So I don't think it's that simple. Could I see Benito Jones elevated from the practice squad? Yeah, maybe. My guess is if it's going to be a long-term injury, more than just a minimum 3 weeks, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw the Dolphins shopping, seeing what's out there in terms of veteran defensive tackles. I kind of scoured online yesterday, didn't see a whole lot that was particularly encouraging in terms of potential replacements. Snacks Harrison is still out there. Does he still want to play? Could he be lured? That'd be that one guy that jumped out at me. Mike Pennell's another nose tackle type who was with the Bears in camp, but then he put him on IR with a groin injury, waived him with an injury settlement. I don't know what his injury status is, what his health is like. Again, this is assuming it's more than just 3 weeks. If it's only 3 weeks, maybe you can roll with John Jenkins and Zach Sealer plays more snaps inside as your nose tackle. So, again, it all depends on exactly how severe the injury is.
You know, I thought Omar made a good point earlier on Monday that the one thing about the Bills, they're really not a power running team, actually.
They're not a running team, period.
Right, right. So, really, this week, Raekwon's not going to be missed nearly as much. And that's why I brought up Jabal because he can get after the quarterback. And Lord knows, as many fresh bodies as you can rotate in and out to get after Josh, because as you know also, Josh has done some damage with his legs.
Or maybe they let Jalen Phillips loose a little bit and then tell him, instead of worrying about edge setting and other responsibilities, like maybe even dropping into coverage, and maybe they just tell him, listen, you see number 17 over there, go get him. So right now they're at 53 because they activated Adam Shaheen off the COVID-19 list. So they don't need to make a roster move. And if they do make a roster move, obviously it needs to be for a reason. You can't just bring up a guy for the heck of it. It's got to be some sort of replacement type of deal. So I could see them sticking with what they have against the Bills, because, yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, the Bills are not going to be running the ball, so Davis is absent, not going to be a major issue there. Then the next week, you're dealing with the Raiders, who throw it more than they run it, but they do have a very good running back with Josh Jacobs. Then the final week, it's the Colts, and then you have to deal with Jonathan Taylor. So the issue that Davis's absence will be felt a lot more in those games than it will against the Bills.
You agree with me that if Fuller plays this week, which it looks like he's going to play this week, that's going to change everything for Gesicki. And if you had Fuller last week, I don't know if the Patriots can really bracket the way they did and take Gesicki out of the mix, because the free safety is terrorized at that point with Fuller and Waddle terrorizing you possibly with that speed. And how much do you think Will Fuller opens it up for a guy like Gesicki and the entire offense now? What do you think? What effects do you think it has adding that speed and that element?
No, there's no question it does help, but let's understand a couple of things here. Gesicki only had two targets. He only played 21 snaps, which is very little. And again, that part of it was the game plan that they were coming up with and who they were playing. New England traditionally is very good at covering tight ends. And Buffalo, if my memory serves, is very bad at covering tight ends, which sets it up for maybe Gesicki having a big game, which I believe he did in week two last year. I know he had that crazy catch over the middle where he stuck out his right hand. But I think just overall, he had a pretty big game on that day. So I could see Gesicki resurfacing. It's just going to be – listen, I was asked this a couple of times about the Dolphins and fantasy football. You stay away from them because they're going to change from week to week. I don't think they're going to have that one guy who every week is going to put up numbers. I think the one guy who they're going to target regularly every week is Jalen Waddle, because of everything he does with his speed and how you can make easy throws to him without forcing anything and without really being kind of a slave to what the defense is doing. So I think Waddle's going to get his touches and targets every week and everybody else, that's going to change from week to week. And the other thing about the last thing about Will Fuller that I'll say is this is his first week back. He barely practiced in training camp. Again, I'd caution against expecting too much too soon from the guy. In due time, and it could be fairly quickly, he will make a big difference in that he's going to open up the field even more for the Dolphin passing game. But well, let's not be shocked if it's if his numbers or his snap count's not that high Sunday against the Bills.
Alan, one of the things that I was talking about on the show in the first hour was that having Wolf, having Waddle, it behooves you to keep him in the slot because with that speed and his change of direction is so good, he can use both sides of the field. Whereas if you're you're on the edge, you got to go from outside in. You know, when you're running your routes, Waddle is he's just a mismatch at that position. And he and like you just said, the easy passes. I think it's just one of those things that really opens it up for Tua. And you are so right. He's the one guy that they're going to find a way to always get him open, pretty much.
Yeah, no question. And look, they drafted him sixth overall for a reason. I mean, he may not have been as quote unquote polished a wide receiver as Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith, but he's the guy with the giddy up. I mean, he's the Tyreek Hill of the bunch. And if you look at all the ways that Kansas City uses Tyreek Hill, and let's just say it works out pretty well for them, there would be nothing wrong with the Dolphins copying, you know, that MO with Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, I'm with you. So explain to me the 10-day wonder in shorts. Albert Wilson did not do anything in the first game. So walk me through what you saw and why Albert Wilson did not do anything after 10 amazing days in shorts.
I'm surprised it took you that long to start ripping on the guy here. Jeez, man, you are relentless. Well, okay, if we're going to go there, in all fairness, he was targeted only twice because Tua was locked in onto Parker and onto Jalen Waddle, number one. Number two, he had a play where he got himself behind the defender in the end zone where he was clearly open, and the throw was a little bit late. It was a little behind, which allowed Jalen Mills, the cornerback, to get a hand on the ball and deflect it on a play that, if we're going to be honest about it, really should have been a touchdown.
Could have been a touchdown, yeah.
Oh. Okay, so then if Albert Wilson on minimum snaps would have gotten, I don't know how long it would have been, a 20-yard touchdown pass, maybe you wouldn't be so harsh on the dude already.
Yeah, no.
Am I right?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. At least he would have done something. You're right about that. Yeah. I didn't see his number called enough out there, and this was an opportunity. This was an opportunity for him with that speed, and you got to worry about Waddle. You got to worry about Gesicki when he is in there. You got to worry about Parker. You figured, okay, you know, you're like the fourth option. You got to find – that's why I'm hoping that Fuller makes a difference this week, because if you're going to be the fourth option, which really Fuller is going to be the fourth option, then you should be, you know, making some kind of an impact in this game. That's all.
Well, no, but the other thing also is they went with blocking tight ends a good part of the afternoon, and that meant Durham Smythe played 38 snaps, and I believe the total number for the Dolphins was 54 offensive plays. Mm-hmm. Smythe got 38 snaps, Gesicki got 21, and Hunter Long got 18, which is almost the same as Gesicki. So they were more interested in having their tight ends do some blocking in this particular game than having Gesicki out there. So. And then Wilson also didn't get that many snaps. I don't recall exactly how many, but I want to say maybe 22. So it wasn't like he had a ton of opportunities out there. So.
Yeah, you're right. It was in the 20s. You're right. You're correct. Offensive line. He already said that Austin Jackson is the left tackle. Eichenberg, as we all know, poor kid got – everybody thought he got pancaked, which he didn't. He got tripped up. Did they talk about how they thought he played overall?
Well, Big O, if you're familiar with this coaching staff and this regime the way it is, ask about any single solitary player. I can assure you they did some good things. They're working hard. They have some improvements to make. So that applies to everybody, every game. So it's up to us to determine how we played. And for me, actually, I thought he was very solid. You mentioned already what happened on the sack. He was called for two holding penalties. One of them was bad because it was in the last drive when they were trying to kill the clock. And he got himself in a bad position and stuck out his hand and grabbed the guy's jersey. The other one was an absolutely horrible call where basically he stood up a pass rusher, the guy fell, and Eichenberg pushed him down even more. And I'm looking at the replay, I'm like, exactly what's the call here? I don't get it. So, and outside of that, I thought he was fine. And look, at the overall offensive line, I know it's really easy to look at the game book and go, whoa, the Dolphins averaged like 3.2 yards. Okay, great. Three kneel downs by Tua, two quarterback sneaks by Jacoby Brissett. Take those out because they're not technically running plays because you're not going to gain 5 yards or 6 yards on the QB sneak, and the kneel down, obviously, is a 1 yard loss every time. Well, you take those away, and the average then becomes 4.0 or 4.1, one of the two, which really? Is, yeah. Which is not great, but it's solid. So
No, that's good for that for this line. That's good, actually. In that game on the road against that front seven, 4 yards a carry, that's a nice nugget you came up with there. I didn't realize that when you do take away those five snaps, it kind of takes away from your average overall. And listen, let me tell you something. I didn't think Dieter played bad in that game. I thought he actually played a decent game. I thought Hunter played a decent game. What did you see from some of the guys?
Yeah, there was nothing. And to me, the offensive line always, and I think we've discussed this, is usually if you don't notice them, they're doing a good job. And then you're going to notice them if they do something really bad or if they have the splash highlight block where they pancake somebody 5 yards down the line. So I didn't know.
Wait a minute. We lost you there. I don't know what happened. You're no volume. Can't hear you. There we go.
Can you hear me? Yes. Okay.
I can hear you now. It's a Verizon commercial.
I apologize for that. I look at the overall result, and the Dolphins wound up with 260 yards of offense or something, which isn't very good. The problem was that New England had almost 400 and they had the ball the whole game. And I thought, all things considered, this is not a bad New England defense we're facing. In fact, I'd say it's a good New England defense with some limitations right now, especially at cornerback because they don't have Gilmore. I thought overall the offensive line did a pretty solid job, including Dieter, you mentioned, and Hunt, and Kinley did have the one ineligible downfield penalty, but negated the one-to-one catch that Gesicki would have had.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, well, is because I know Barry asked on Monday, which is a question you got to ask, that is Jackson your starter or will there be competition there? The way I kind of look at it is, in a perfect world, you kind of want Jackson to stay there at left tackle, and you really want Eichenberg to move over to right tackle to compete with Jesse, and eventually you'd like for him to take over because that's still Tua's blind side. So you want to kind of solidify that. And then have Jesse in what I think is his perfect role is a six-man guy that is there ready to go and fill in different spots. That's what I would like. To me, instead of trying to compete, create competition on the left side, I'd like to try to groom the kid to become the right tackle.
Well, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you there because I'm still going to maintain that right now Jesse Davis is their best offensive lineman. And
of course,
I'll be honest right here. Did you notice anything Davis's guy did on Sunday where he took advantage of Davis and did anything? To me, he played like a very clean game.
The only thing that I got to go look at it again, but the only thing that I kind of question with Jesse, and it's only one stinking play, there was a sack where he had somebody next to him. Was it a back? I think it was. I thought he waited too long to help the back out because he wasn't blocking anybody at that moment. And they ran the back over, and it became a sack, I think, if I remember correctly. And that was the one play that I thought, hey, Jesse, you got to move a little faster and help your guy out because you weren't handling anybody on the left side. The guard had – Hunt was taking care of his guy. You had nobody in front of you, so you had the outside pass rusher. And I thought he could have helped out his back a little bit more. Now, I don't know the blocking scheme. Maybe that's where he's supposed to stay – no matter what, because of the play that was called too. And because you do have a short quarterback, passing lanes are incredibly important. So if you crumble on one side and you hurt the passing lane on the right side, and then the passes for the right side,
it then hurts the whole process. So I understand the bigger picture to all of it, so I don't have all the answers, but that was the only thing I could nitpick. You're right. He played a solid game.
No, and that's what he does. I mean, the thing with Jesse is he's not, like, physically imposing like Robert Hunt might be a right guard. He's not athletically overly impressive. I mean, you don't see, like, very quick feet. He's just very, very, very steady. He knows what he's doing. He's been around. And to me, the idea of, well, let's make him a backup because he can move from position to position, unless you're absolutely sure that the guy you put in this place at right tackle is going to do the same kind of job, I'm not on board with that.
No, I'm with you. And by the way, he is physically imposing enough to kick our ass. I do want to.
That's a low bar.
Just in case, Jesse, all right, just in case you're watching or anything like that, we are well aware you are physically imposing enough to kick our ass, okay? I just want to make sure you know that there. Overall, what'd you think of the defense? Because they gave up their yards, and what do you think they got to do this week to kind of keep the team in the game? Because that's the one thing, while they gave up yards and they bent, they didn't really break. They forced them to settle for field goals. They forced turnovers, which I don't think we give them enough credit for forcing four turnovers and getting two of those fumbles, which was freaking awesome by the team overall. But when you talk about the running game, what do they got to do this week against Buffalo?
Before I talk about that, speaking of Jesse Davis, it's his birthday today. So if he ever catches wind of this, happy birthday, Jesse Davis, along with
Marino and Jesse. Wow.
Along with Dan Marino. Correct. So the defense, here's the thing. I mean, didn't it look a whole lot like 2020 where they gave up yardage, but they found a way to make the stops? I mean, it was all same thing all over again. And if you look at the numbers, I mean, it was 393 total yards for New England. That's not good. But New England was only 1-for-4 in the red zone. They had the two turnovers, including the big one at the end. And again, a lot of that goes as credit to the Dolphins. Some of that you have to say to the New England backs, Ramondre Stevenson on the first one and Damian Harris on the second one. Like, when he's running the ball there inside the 10-yard line at the end of the game like that, did he not expect the Dolphins to try to rip the ball out of his hands? So, again, kudos to Xavien Howard for making the play. It's taking advantage of a mistake from the other team. And let's just realize also that the Buffalo offense, even though it looked bad against Pittsburgh, is a hell of a lot better than the New England offense. So the idea that you're going to be bailed out by turnovers again and you're not going to give up a lot of yardage, that's kind of shaky a little bit. So they got to make Josh Allen uncomfortable. That's what Pittsburgh did but the thing is, they rushed for most of the game, except that Buffalo's tackles couldn't handle TJ Watt coming in from the left side. They couldn't handle Melvin Ingram coming in from the right side. The Dolphins, as they are right now, are not that kind of team. They create pressure by sending five or six, which leaves them more vulnerable on the back end. So that's the concern when it comes to facing Buffalo. And the other factor is, if you use the past to predict the future, well, Josh Allen has absolutely killed the Dolphins ever since he's been in the league. Even his rookie year, when he was spraying the ball all over the place, I mean, he ran
like a running back, dude. He ran like
killing the Dolphins. Yep.
Like he was Walter Payton against the Dolphins. All right, we'll wrap it up with this, and you led me to the secondary, and this is kind of like a catch-22 question. Not for you, but for the team and for the player. And it's funny because fans constantly complain about Noah Igbinoghamy, and I get it. First-round pick has not come through. But there's also an entire bitch to this situation. You know, Needham has developed. You have two stud corners. He played a little bit last year when Jones was out for a couple of games. But really, in the end, how do you develop a first-rounder that never can play? And because they're not really ever tanking, they're actually trying to win games, you're not going to sacrifice Noah or somebody else's playing time to put the kid out there because you've got to win. So maybe they screwed up in the front office by drafting him because they were trying to protect themselves for something down the line, or they didn't expect to find a Nick Needham. You know what I'm saying? And so all of a sudden now they're kind of in a catch-22 that a kid that was a receiver – that needs to learn the position badly needs a lot of playing time to screw up a lot so he can kind of figure this thing out. And he doesn't get the playing time. He doesn't get the opportunities to make mistakes, to grow from it. So it's a real tough situation because I get the criticism, but maybe the criticism is not completely fair because the kid's not getting an opportunity to really prove himself, whether he can actually grow into the damn position. So we'll never find out whether he's good or not at that spot.
Yeah, except if I'm being honest, I think it's fair criticism because right now the Dolphins could have Jonathan Taylor as their lead running back instead of having Noah Igbinoghene. And on the issue of developing a player, well, the time to develop the player is the offseason. It's OTAs, it's training camp, it's the preseason. Once you get into the regular season, it's about winning games. And this tells you, I mean, he's pretty far down the pecking order when it comes to cornerbacks. And it's pretty telling that they wound up dressing and playing Jamal Perry instead of Igbinoghene in that game against New England. And obviously it was due to special teams since Perry didn't play a snap on defense.
Right.
But I don't know that there's a whole lot of trust in Igbinoghene as a cornerback right now. And again, if you've seen
it, there's no trust. There's no trust.
No, but the problem is he hasn't shown instincts. You're looking at a really, really, really good athlete who, yeah, again, is really lacking in instincts and is going to get exposed probably more often than not if you put him out there on defense. So,
but the only way he develops those instincts is to actually go out and play and make mistakes. But this team doesn't have the time to do that in the regular season. They're not an expansion team. They're not the Jags trying to rebuild or something like that. If you were in those kind of situations, fine. But coming off a 10-win season with expectations now for playoffs, there's no way you can play the kid at all. Sucks. And he's not your main returner, which at least they use that. They use them in the special in preseason as a returner, but you're healthy as hell there, so you don't need to activate him. And he's not a gunner, so you've got to go use Jamal Perry. I get it.
No, and if we're being honest, did we see anything special as a kickoff returner from him at any point?
No.
It may have been a case of, and this is me saying it, this is not them, and I don't know that for a fact, but it may have been a case of, let's see if we catch fire with this guy as a kickoff returner, so then we can use him. So then maybe in a game that's a blowout, we can put him out there on defense towards the end of the game so he gets game reps, because right now, you're basically, if you're going to put him out there, you're basically wasting a roster spot in the event, again, that the game is a blowout one way or the other, and they can put him on the field so he can get game reps to develop, because he's very far from a finished product right now.
Yep, I'm with you. Follow him on Twitter at A Poupart. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Poupart NFL. I'm thinking of the old address there. You know what I mean? We don't remember phone numbers now, but we do remember Twitter handles. Okay,
that's the most important thing.
That's the life that we live now, because all of our phones, all the memories in there, we don't need to learn. We just pull up somebody's name now. We don't even remember numbers. Poupart NFL, what are you working on SI? That, by the way, Dolphin fans, you need to bookmark his SI page. It's got all of his articles there. It is super easy. They make it super easy for you to follow. What are you working on, dude?
A lot, as always. I'm on a track right now. I'm like pumping out like six stories a day. Today I've already posted part one of a mailbag, which is questions from fans that I answer to the best of my ability. Brian Flores' pre-practice takeaways, including what he said about Raekwon Davis, which was basically not a whole lot, but he had other interesting things to say as well. The first injury report of the week is going to come out later this afternoon. We're going to analyze that. We'll do, and then Tua speaking later today. So we'll do a story or two off of the player interviews today, which include Tua. I think we're supposed to get Austin Jackson as well. Again, as always, though, there'll be a lot of stuff on there.
You are a stud. Poupart NFL, catch him on Sunday, and he'll get us ready for Dolphins and Bills. He is Alan Poupart. Alan, thank you, sir. Appreciate you as always.
Right back at you, and have a good rest of the week.
You got it, my man. There you go. Alan Poupart, good stuff with the Sports Grill Miami Dolphins Insider Report, and you get it every week right here on the program.